Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Remember the military assistance we promised the Syrian rebels? Yeah, whatever happened with that anyway? Paying real money for fantasy football insurance. And a new series gets going today with James Fallows and The Atlantic, American Futures, we're calling it, from American Public Media. This is Marketplace.
Wake up to the day's top business headlines. Subscribe to the Marketplace Morning Report podcast. It's on iTunes and marketplace.org/podcasts.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Ryssdal. It is great to have you here, everybody. This is the Marketplace podcast for Wednesday, the 4th of September. President Obama's foreign policy team was back at the Capitol this morning, the House this time, making the case for a strike on Syria. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee did approve a resolution authorizing military force today. A vote in the full Senate is, of course, yet to come. But before the yeas and nays are called, there have been a lot of questions up on the Hill about the money, the military aid the White House promised to send to the Syrian opposition. At least publicly, the Obama administration isn't talking much about that. Marketplace's David Gura picks it up from there.
At the beginning of the summer, President Obama was under pressure to do more about the worsening situation in Syria. There were reports the government there had used chemical weapons. Until then, the U.S. had supported the Syrian opposition in a very limited way. It provided things like medicine and vehicles, but no guns.
Obama upped the ante and said, we're going to provide lethal aid.
That's Josh Landis. He's a Syria specialist at the University of Oklahoma, and we should say he's been opposed to further U.S. involvement. The president promised that additional aid almost 3 months ago, but since then,
Obama has not been showing up with lots of arms.
The White House tells Marketplace it won't give out inventories of the assistance it provides to the Syrian opposition, or timelines. Josh Landis says this is why.
You're not hearing about it because it's classified.
Classified or not, there's a reason the process has moved so slowly. Lawmakers weren't satisfied with the White House's plan. Robert Dineen is a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations.
I think the biggest problem that the administration has faced in looking at arming the rebels is, who do you arm?
The Syrian opposition is not a monolith. It's made up of more than 1,000 militias. And figuring out who's loyal to whom takes time. It's important to get right because arms, Dineen says, are the coin of the realm.
This is the way in which political support for the rebels is being expressed, and this is the way in which relationships are being developed.
Dineen says this is the argument. If somebody else gives weapons to the rebels, that somebody else will enjoy their support if the Assad regime falls. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
We could talk all day about who's to blame for the financial crisis because there is plenty of said blame to go around. The ratings agencies, Standard & Poor's and Moody's and Fitch, figure prominently in that discussion because they gave top grades to all those subprime mortgage bonds that later went south. Anyway, earlier this year, the Justice Department sued S&P for $5 billion, by the by, saying it misrepresented its rating process on those bonds. S&P now says the government just wants revenge because 2 years ago, the company downgraded Uncle Sam's debt rating. Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith has that story.
When a company wants to raise money, it can issue bonds. The bonds get graded based on how likely it is that investors will get paid back. Justin Wolfers is an economist with the Brookings Institution.
They take publicly available information and try and digest it down into a letter grade.
Before the financial crisis, there was a lot of grade inflation. Part of the reason? The ratings agencies get paid by the companies they're grading. Max Wolf is an economist at DT Wealth.
And that creates a sort of inherent conflict of interest.
After the financial crash, all the ratings agencies came under pressure to get tougher. Wolf says S&P got overzealous and downgraded the U.S., saying Treasury bonds no longer merited a AAA rating because Washington couldn't deal with the budget deficit.
Trying to kind of brand itself as hard-nosed and willing to do the unpopular to begin to build back the reputation that was damaged.
The rebranding backfired. Fitch and Moody's didn't follow suit, and demand for U.S. bonds only grew. The government has sued S&P for its role in the financial crisis, but not Moody's or Fitch, even though their businesses were similar. S&P claims the government wants revenge for the U.S. downgrade.
I think S&P is just looking rather foolish.
Dean Baker is with the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington. He says the government probably sued S&P because it had the strongest evidence against it.
There was a famous email that someone at S&P had sent a colleague, and the line was that we would give an issue AAA if it were structured by cows.
Baker says S&P might just be the first. He doesn't rule out lawsuits against Moody's and Fitch. In New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
Ratings agencies aside, Wall Street was just fine today. Thank you very much. There was some reassuring economic news coming out of the Fed. Car sales were up last month. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. I took a road trip a couple of weeks back with Jim Fallows from The Atlantic, just getting out and about, except this time, we're taking a plane.
St. Paul Ground, Cirrus 435, Sierra Romeo at St. Paul Flight Center.
Jim's plane. He and his wife Deb are flying from small town to small town in their own single-engine four-seater, with me tagging along every now and then.
Minneapolis Center, it's 435 Sierra Romeo. We're with you, 3,500.
It's part of a series we're doing with Jim and Deb and The Atlantic, called American Futures, about what this country and the American economy look like right now. Because as he and I talked about in the plane that day, when you're flying around at 3,500 feet,
there's a view of the world. You get this way, you simply can't get any other way.
You can go places and learn things you might ordinarily miss.
Oh, I'll show you something else. Click the 100 low LED. Shows you the current gas prices on all the airports.
Look at that.
And in the process, you come to remember pretty quick that the American economy isn't all multinational corporations and monetary policy and Wall Street. It's what's happening with people and small businesses in towns and cities all over this country and how that connects us to the rest of the world. So we're going to start for this first trip with Jim in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, which, whether we all realize it or not, is already part of our lives, from how we eat to how we pay our bills, to how we grow our food.
Sioux Falls, runway 21, clear to land.
There's more of American Futures coming up from Sioux Falls. It's a cool story.
Runway 21, clear to land, Roger.
Stick around. Football fans have a little bit more than 24 hours left to wait till the start of the season, which means for the truly dedicated among you, there is still time to join a fantasy football league. Draft a team, follow your player's stats, you trade, you wheel and deal, and have your general manager dreams fulfilled. If you're a serious fantasy player, there is something you ought to know about, though. It's called FantasyPlayerProtect.com. You can buy real insurance for the players on your make-believe team. Joe LaGiglia is one of the founders. Joe, it's good to have you with us.
Thank you, Kai.
I will say this is a creative idea, man.
Thank you very much.
Where did you come up with it?
Well, we've been diehard fantasy gamers for a real long time, and it was just one of those things that was definitely built out of necessity. My brother Phil and I just happened to always draft the guys that got injured on our fantasy team.
Yeah.
And we decided to do something business-wise with it, and that's really where FantasyPlayerProtect.com came from.
And let's say I have Aaron Rodgers, and I'm smart, so I've called you before the season, and I've signed up, and I've said, I want to insure Aaron Rodgers. How does that work?
Go to our website, click on Aaron Rodgers, and being a real insurance product backed by an A-rated insurance company, you would get a premium amount for Aaron Rodgers, the amount that you have invested into your league to build that team.
And well, okay, so let's back up for a minute. I am being insured against the loss of my entry fee to the league, which is what, like $100, $200, what?
Yeah, so the average right now out there is between around 150 to 200.
Okay.
We offer coverage up to 1,000, but certainly it's a wide range. You know, $50 leagues, $100 leagues is, you know, kind of where a lot of the common people play.
And so I pay my premium, and then if Aaron Rodgers gets hurt, what, I get that $100 back after, you know, I pay what, probably $10, $20 to guarantee my $100?
That's exactly right.
And here's where I lose my grasp on reality. You understand that this is like make-believe stuff, right?
Well, I tell you what, Kai, 35 million gamers can't be wrong. if you talk to any gamers that are out there, there's a huge passion. And fantasy or not, there's a lot of people that believe this is a real fun hobby that has gone mainstream over the last few years.
You know, it occurs to me, even as much as I made fun of you for this being make-believe and stuff, it does occur to me that teams have insurance on these players, right? I mean, the Green Bay Packers probably have Aaron Rodgers insured out the wazoo.
Well, that's certainly the case. I mean, really what we've done is take that concept of the real world and bring it over to the fantasy, because the amount of money that's being spent on Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay really does equate to the amount of money being spent on Aaron Rodgers in the fantasy world.
What do you get if you win your fantasy league? I guess now that I think about it, you get the proceeds, right? If you've got 30 people at $100 a whack, you get, what, $3,000, right?
That's exactly correct. Okay. And as I said, that's why the amount being spent on team ownership costs has really gone up over the last few years. But really, besides winning the financial outlay, there's a huge bragging rights here that really does last the whole year long until the next season starts.
Yeah, no, I bet. Who do you like? Who have you drafted first for this year?
Well, being from Chicago, you know, I always look to grab some of those top Chicago players. So Brandon Marshall and Matt Forte have...
Jay Cutler's there, yo, right?
He's a great backup quarterback on your fantasy team. And we're hoping that with the new offense we got going on over here in Chicago, he'll have a good year.
Joe LaGiglia, his new company is called FantasyPlayerProtect.com. Joe, thanks a bunch.
Thank you very much.
Coming up,
and what we're doing here is packaging scrambled eggs that'll be going into hotels all around the country.
Sioux Falls, South Dakota. It's closer than you think, gang. But first, let's do the numbers. Well, here's where we are on the 4th of September. The Dow Industrials gained 0.2%. Today, 96 points, 14,930 on the blue chips. The NASDAQ grew 1%. That is 36 points. Finished at 36.49. The S&P 500 pocketed 0.8%, 13.1653 at the end of the day. Strong monthly auto sales drove lots of stocks higher. General Motors added 5%. Ford picked up nearly 3.5%. Tesla charged up 0.1%. All the financials ended better than where they started. J.P. Morgan Chase was ahead more than 1%. Today, Goldman Sachs advanced about 0.5%. Citigroup ended nearly 0.5% higher as well. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 2.89%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a glance at what's coming up Thursday. In Washington, the Labor Department issues its revised productivity and cost report for the second quarter. If you're looking ahead to fall, you're already behind. Designers unveil their spring collections in New York during Fashion Week. But not to worry, you don't have to get dressed up for this, unless you want to. The NFL season begins with the Baltimore Ravens playing the Denver Broncos. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdahl. The minds behind Google's Android mobile operating system have decided what to call their newest version. They're naming it, drum roll here, please. Wait, what? We're not going to do that? Okay, we don't do that. Anyway, they're naming it after a candy bar that starts with a K. Can you guess what it is? Marketplace's Sarah Gardner ends the suspense.
Let's see. Hershey's Kisses? Kiwi Jelly Beans? Crackle Bars? No, Google's nicknaming Android 4.4 Kit Kat. If you didn't know, and do not worry if you didn't, Google has a habit of codenaming each Android release after a sweet of some kind. And in true geek style, they do it in alphabetical order. Cupcake, donut, eclair, you get the idea. This go-round, it was time for a K, and all bets were on key lime pie. But...
you go with key lime pie, and you're kind of sitting there thinking about a bad dessert at a diner.
Not to mention old school, says branding exec Robert Pasikoff. That's partly why Google went with Kit Kat. It's a favorite late-night snack among the 20-somethings who toil at the company. Android execs at first didn't even know who owned the candy bar, but they ended up cold-calling Nestle to see if the Swiss firm would be interested. 2 days later, they had a hush-hush international deal. Annalyn Jarrus at Hershey's, which makes Kit Kats in the U.S., was ordered to keep the big candy news under wraps.
The U.S. team has actively been working on this for about 9 or 10 months in secret with probably a core team of only 30 people.
Lingera says it's a no-money exchange, cross-promotional sort of thing. Today, she proclaimed Kit Kat and Android natural partners. They're both innovators, after all. Take the Kit Kat Mini.
We took that iconic Kit Kat bar that everybody knows and loves and those fingers, the taste, the texture, the crispiness of the wafers, and we miniaturized it.
See if you can beat that, Silicon Valley. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
After a long fight over how deeply to get involved with Obamacare, Michigan has come to a decision. Today, state lawmakers agreed to offer Medicaid to nearly 500,000 additional low-income adults. Once it gets up and running late next spring sometime, the challenge is going to be signing people up for it. In Michigan, as in a lot of states, there's no small number of teenagers who could take advantage of Medicaid, but don't. From Michigan Radio, here's Sarah Alvarez.
Earlier this year, Jacquees Purifoy was laid off from her job as an attorney. And until about 2 months ago, she and her daughter went without health insurance.
You know, I don't know. I think I kind of just buried my head in the sand a little bit, which was dangerous.
Purifoy probably could have enrolled her 17-year-old daughter, Jasmine, in Michigan's Medicaid programs, but she didn't. She was too proud and says she would have felt guilty about trying to access Medicaid. She was also hopeful her private insurance from the new job would kick in soon. Then she got a call from Jasmine, who has asthma and a heart condition.
So she called me from school saying, "You have to come and get me now." I knew that it was urgent. I knew I didn't have health insurance. It was really life or death, you know. Do I let this kid die, essentially, or do I get a god-awful bill? And of course, I'm going to choose protecting my daughter.
Luckily, nothing was going on with Jasmine's heart, but it cost around $1,800 to find that out. Purifoy is paying off the bill in monthly installments, and Jasmine is now insured. But across the country, there are hundreds of thousands of teenagers eligible for Medicaid that aren't insured. It's a trend providers like Lori Parton are familiar with.
When they get to a certain age, it doesn't become as important to them or maybe to their parent or guardian to keep the insurance up. They seem to be healthy. They don't really need the medical care.
Parton is a patient advocate at the Corner Health Center. It's an adolescent health clinic in Ypsilanti, Michigan. The Corner cuts through red tape for their patients and signs up anybody eligible for Medicaid as long as they have a parent's permission. Anise Summerhill is 19 and can sign herself up.
So with the application that you turned in, everything looks great, except we were a little confused because...
Yeah, because I was confused.
Okay.
In Michigan, there are more than 71,000 infants signed up for Medicaid. By age 18, there are fewer than 3,000 kids signed up for Medicaid. Nobody really knows why this is happening. Some families might be able to work more and make more money as their kids age, so they don't need Medicaid. Some of it could be parent confusion about age and income limits or requirements to re-enroll every year. To get past this, Michigan is working with school districts to enroll more teens under a new federal grant. Jacquees Purifoy says if she could talk directly to other parents, this is what she'd say.
Hey, this resource is available. Regardless of what you may be going through, your children deserve proper health care. It can save your life.
It can save your life. And Purifoy says it can save you a lot of money. From Ypsilanti, Michigan, I'm Sarah Alvarez for Marketplace.
We're going to pick up with that road trip I was talking about earlier in just a minute or two, our series American Futures that we're doing with Jim and Deb Fallows in The Atlantic. Before we get going, though, and bear with me here for a second, if you would, I'm going to go grocery shopping. All right, in we go. Whole Foods, Pasadena.
Oh, smells like Whole Foods.
All right, frozen foods aisle. Sioux Falls section.
Oh, wait, is that it? Start healthy, right? It looks for all the world like an egg muffin, but it's probably not. There you go. Product of Grand Prairie Foods, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, 57103. Product of the USA, GrandPrairieFoods.com. This is going to cost me how much? $4.49. All right, let's give it a whack.
Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Sioux Falls approach, Cirrus 435 Sierra Romeo. Got Tango for landing.
Our first stop in American Futures.
Sioux Falls approach, squawk 0.
The Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
180 on the runway, contacting ground, point 9.
We park Jim's plane. It's a Cirrus SR-22 for the general aviation buffs among you. He arranges for gas and an engine oil change, and I get into a rental car and head downtown. Sioux Falls, population just about 160,000, and by the by, the center of your universe. All right, maybe I'm overstating things here, but not by a whole lot. Sioux Falls is closer to you, and you are closer to it than you know. Your credit card statements? Sioux Falls. The ethanol that some of you pump into your cars, quite possibly produced in Sioux Falls. And then your food. Pork from the giant packing plant in town, not far from the airport. And from a company called Grand Prairie, just a couple of miles from downtown. Had to wash my hands before they let me look around.
So these are automatic. You just put your hand under here.
All right.
Grab some soap. And you're supposed to sing the happy birthday song.
Happy birthday to me. Grand Prairie doesn't have the name recognition that Kraft or Tyson does. But as CEO Kurt Loudenback told me, if you've ever eaten breakfast at a hotel, or if your kids eat school lunches, or if you've bought a frozen breakfast sandwich at Whole Foods like my shopping trip earlier, you've had their stuff.
What we're doing here is packaging scrambled eggs that'll be going into hotels all around the country.
So you mean all those hotels didn't make their own scrambled eggs?
Quiet. That's our dirty little secret.
You are actually putting me on.
It depends on the hotel. Many and especially.
The whole time Kurt was showing me around, I kept wondering how it is that a family-owned company in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, has brand-name multinationals knocking on its door and buying their products. How does that happen?
Well, the way it started was with a neighbor of ours that owned hotels. And I was mowing the grass one day, and he stopped his car and said, "Hey, how are you doing?" And I said, "Great. Hey, do you know anybody at Hampton Inn or Marriott Hotels that I can connect with?" And he sent me their email addresses, and I reached out to them and told them a little bit about what we have. And one thing led to another, and we ended up doing business with the Hamptons. And just by happenstance, I learned that they were looking for the egg products that we're doing. And so I just said, "Hey, I think I can do those."
Grand Prairie has about 85 people working there. It's been growing the past couple of years. Good, steady jobs. Which is part of the reason the unemployment rate here is so low. 3% low. And why people like this guy...
My name is Vidan Basnet.
Come here. Vidan is a refugee. He's from Bhutan in the Himalayas. And he was placed here by a social services group because of all the jobs that keep the unemployment rate so low. We talk while his wife and his sister made Bhutanese vegetable dumplings. You can hear him there in the background, I think. And we talked about his job at the packing plant. He makes ham, Smithfield ham, that you find in your grocery store.
And what do you do?
Discard the meat.
Discard the meat.
Yeah.
Is it a good job, do you think?
Yeah.
It sounds like you're not sure.
Yeah, not sure, because it's kind of hard job.
Tell me about it. What do you do every day?
He points to his thigh.
Thigh, yeah?
This part, the ham?
Ham, yeah. This
the
ham.
Bone of the ham.
You take the bone out of
the
ham.
Yeah.
So we get boneless ham from you.
Yeah.
Wow. And how many hams do you do every day?
Something like 5,000.
You do 5,000 hams a day?
Yeah.
You, just you?
Something like 3,000-4,000 per person.
Wow. Now, how much money do you make?
Per hour, I make $15.95.
$15.95.
But the work is too much hard. You can see my hand, see? It's like stone.
It's torn, it's blistered. Yeah, let me see.
There were calluses. They were the size of cough drops, the biggest ones you've ever seen. Like he said, just like stones.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. And that's from holding a knife?
Yeah.
So show me how you hold the knife. Like that, and you go like this?
Yeah, we have to work like this, like 6 hours, 7 hours, sometimes 10 hours. We have to work like this fast. It's not danger to cut, but we have to work very fast.
There are so many immigrants and refugees in Sioux Falls now doing these kinds of jobs that the local school district has to think about how to teach kids from more than 60 different language backgrounds. 60. Spanish, no surprise, here is in the top 10. But so are Nepali and Swahili. Arabic, Somali, Amharic, spoken mostly in Ethiopia, and Vietnamese as well. People who've come to Sioux Falls from all over the world because they can get a job at Grand Prairie, for instance, making food for you. Which gets us, in a roundabout way, back to Los Angeles and my shopping trip and the microwave at Marketplace World headquarters.
Now, we're going to see how this thing actually tastes. You know, the interesting part of this is that When I was in Sioux Falls at Grand Prairie, I saw them making not these kind of eggs, but scrambled eggs going in a hopper by the, I don't want to say tons, but it was certainly by the hundreds of pounds of scrambled eggs, which is what that sort of looks like there. It's not bad.
American Futures, our road trip with Jim and Deb Fallows and their airplane, continues tomorrow. In the meanwhile, you can see where Jim and Deb have been and the things they saw of note en route, thanks to our interactive mapping partners at Esri. That's all on our website, as is Jim's blog of their adventures. Check it out. It's at marketplace.org.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note today, in which Christmas comes early in a manner of speaking, the Utah Department of Agriculture and Food says red honey is showing up in some beehives around the state. The suspect is a local factory that makes candy canes. Officials figure the bees have been eating the leftovers and thus the red honey. It is, if you stop to think about it for a second, insult to injury here because, A, state regulations say only a product that originates from a floral source is actually honey in Utah. And B, Utah's nickname, anybody? Anyone? Bueller? That's right. It's the Beehive State. There you go. All right. With that, we are out of here. That's Marketplace from APM. Today, the Dow up 2/3 of 1%, 96 points. The NASDAQ grew 1%. That is 36 points. The S&P 500 put on 0.8%. That's about 13 points there. Carlos Asensio, Robbie Carman, Chris Clark, Stephen Colon, Bill Lance, Jeff Peters, Charlton Thorpe, and Brendan Willard, and Randy Wine as well, engineer the program for us. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will meet you back here tomorrow, everybody. And this is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.